time Drugs started and they released this album, you were pretty much completely checked out on the scene. And I've always found it interesting how you were a fan of this record. Where did it even come from for you?
Yes, I did not care about the scene at the time that this came out. I was like exclusively listening to like old Rancid albums and Alkaline Trio. But yeah, somebody in my life, I guess it was right before I started working at AP, so it would have been like around 2015, was a fan and played some songs, and I like thought they had like were really good, catchy songs before I realized, like, it took a while for me to make the connection of what the lyrics were. And once I like listened to the lyrics, I was like, okay, like maybe not. So in my head, it's just like, yeah, these are bangers, but also like they're kind of, I don't want to say stupid. Yeah, I do. They're stupid.
So were you around for the rollout of any of it? Like the post, you know, Chiodos hype or anything like that?
No, so I don't remember them forming. I don't remember the supergroup happening. But the reason that I was the most interested is because I heard a song and I was like, oh, this is catchy. Like, what is this? And then when it was like, oh, Matt Good. I loved Matt Good. Like when I was a sophomore in high school, I guess. Like, was super into From First to Last. And Matt Good was, like, my childhood, like, crush. So I was like, oh, I'm interested. I'd like to see it.
I'd like to see it.
What is Matt Good doing now?
That's so crazy that you still got into it and weren't around for any of the...
I mean, into it is, like, I feel like going a little too far. Like, I wasn't, like, listening to full albums straight through. But I was like, these songs are sick. But again, like, I always... What does he say before the breakdown? And if you think this song is about you, it probably is. It's like, I knew you were gonna sleep with him as soon as I left you. Like, that was my first red flag where I was like, that's a weird thing to say in a song. Maybe chill.
Welcome back to the scene.
Right, I know. And then once you go through and like actually pick out some other lyrics, it gets worse, I guess. So I mean, there's always a little bit of like with a grain of salt, but I mean, the songs themselves, like, musically, bangers.
Shout out to John Feldman for writing that whole record.
Thank you again, John Feldman.
it's a very crazy story, and the scene didn't really see anything like that through its second half. Drugs was basically made by Pete Wentz and signed to his label, and he kind of built the band around Craig and for Craig, and they recorded a kick-ass post-hardcore album with a shit ton of melody and a lot of electronic influence into it. And they did, I can't remember exactly what they did first week, I don't have it in my notes, but it was somewhere around 17,000, which was, you know, impressive for a debut album, but considering what Chiodos was coming off of when Craig was still in the band, the Bone Palace Ballet Cycle was just absolutely ridiculous. They were getting radio play off of Lexington. Craig was the biggest figure in the scene at that point. And I remember one time Matt was telling me, I think they played a one-off date on Warped Tour in 2009 in Grand Rapids, like their hometown kind of show for Warped Tour that summer, and he was on the barricade. And he said you literally couldn't hear the band over how many girls were screaming.
Yeah, I think that was one. So again, I missed a big portion of, like, I wasn't in the trenches during that time. I just, like, completely bypassed it. So in my head, I'm like, do people really love this dude that much? And yes, they did.
Yeah, they really did. It was insane how much Chiodos blew up and Craig blew up as a scene star.
But I do remember Chiodos being big. Like, they were big enough that, like...
Yeah, they were opening up for Fall Out Boy on one tour towards, like, I don't remember if that was on the All's Well cycle or the Bone Palace cycle, but there was a time where they were the biggest band in the scene, and that was wild to watch. But, so, fast forward, basically, you know, 9 years later, and everything kind of fell apart around Craig, and the scene fell apart, and it's a completely different world now. So, on February 18th, we published a piece called What the Hell Happened to Craig Owens, and it's my favorite piece that I've been a part of in a long time, and as far as an editorial sense, because it just documents, it's a historical document of, you know, what happened to these people? I remember I ran a story with a very similar title when I was still at AP, basically just said, what happened to 303? Because I think it was in 2015 or 2016. I think it was in 2015. At that point, they were one of those bands who were massive and no one had heard of them for, you know, 3 or 4 years at that point. And of course, Matt got an email later in that day from their manager, completely pissed off.
I think it's interesting. So when Tyler brought this up and wanted to do it, like, he brought it up as he wanted to do it for a bunch of different people or like bands. And I was kind of like, ugh, God. Only because I knew that people would get mad at it. Even though it's not negative at all. Like, this wasn't meant to be, like, a Craig Owens takedown piece.
It's not a teardown.
Like, it's literally just, like, here's how his career unfolded. Like, here's what happened. Let's take a look at it. Maybe figure out why it wasn't, he's not as popular now as he used to be because he was so big. And right. It's not even a negative, like, that was a time in, like, popular culture where this type of music was popular. So would I expect Craig Owens to be as popular now as I did then? Absolutely not. Like, you're not freaking Lizzo or Billie Eilish. Like, thank God they are, like, the opposite of what was popular at that point, which the world needed to skew that far that way. Everyone takes everything so personally, and you're just like, you're being mean or you're being a bully if you want to bring up things that are facts that maybe aren't showing someone in their best light.
Right.
But it's like, you have to. You can't just ignore the right. parts of your career that weren't great. They right. happened. They're here. And if you're happy making R&B music with, like, releasing it to your fans and you still have people that care about you, like, cool, fine, you just want to make music, like, that's your prerogative, but you can't exist in a vacuum where no one can criticize it because that's mean.
Right. Everything is not awesome 100% of the time, and sometimes the truth fucking hurts, and that's all kind of Note to Scene has always been, is just a documentarian type of space where we can talk about what the hell happened, because we don't have any of this anymore.
Right. And it's like, it's not even like you like you just said it and everything's not awesome all the time, and like, it's not even saying whether or not his new stuff is
sure.
good or bad. It's literally just taking a look at the popularity and the number of people streaming it, and compared to what the people that were listening to Chiodos or Drugs, like, it's not good or bad. Just, it is what it is.
It's literally just speaking facts. That's all that piece is, and we're gonna keep running them, and that's all they're gonna be.
And it's, people think, like, oh, you're just trying to point out the negative. And no, we're not just trying to point out the negative. We're trying to look at a career trajectory. And, like, yes, it may have a little bit of a snarky tone to it. This
is called
rock
a voice.
And roll. Yeah, this is rock and roll. Like, deal with it. People are allowed to have opinions. Everyone's not being mean. I don't know how we got to this point where... Well, I do know how we got to this point, actually. We built a music scene around men whining about what everyone does to them and how they are the victims. And this girl broke my heart and I'm sad and feel bad for me. They've never done anything wrong in their lives. Where it's like, even if you're in a relationship, like, and someone treats you terribly, you can look back on it at the things that you did that allowed that to happen or be the way that it was. And this scene is not, like Matt said, they're not going out gracefully, and they are not trying to be self-reflective and look at, like, maybe what they could have done differently to not have these events occur that made them, quote, sad.
Exactly. So that's why we ran that piece, and that's what Note to Scene is. We're here to unpack all of this, and we've always been about trajectory and momentum and the commercial side of things ever since Matt and I started it. That's why we started it. And honestly, I definitely didn't expect anyone to listen to us, but it is funny to me how much a small website and podcast can have as far as impact-wise on some of these people that still exist in the scene. So Craig brought back Drugs. He released a song called King I Am on February 25th. We published that article on February 18th.
We're not saying we brought back Drugs.
No,
but
not at
all.
But
the timing
is interesting. He commented on our Facebook page just saying, I'm right here. And later that day, when we posted the article, he tweeted, "Trying to find a way to tell my story, so they dropped trying to tell it for me."
Again, this was not, like, the Craig Owens life story. It was literally just, here's the things that he has done since drugs and why maybe they haven't done as well. And what fans expect right. and want out of him. Which is a heavy return, which drugs came back, so...
yeah. Funny how that worked. So, it's so interesting how the internet fosters this kind of group rage think, but you see it in every
Yeah, the scene's circle. Not special. Craig no. Owens isn't special. I'm not saying, like, that came out worse, sounding worse, but he is not, like, a particular case no. where no one, like, this happens in every genre. Not, like, beyond music, it happens in comedy and, like, sports and everything.
Every space in the entertainment world, this happens, and definitely elsewhere. Look at politics. So he dropped a song called King I Am. It's produced by this man. Don't know how I'm pronouncing his first name, but it might be
Hiram
Hernandez, which is interesting because this is the same guy that Craig dropped a kind of Lucy surprise grindcore EP in 2016 that was super heavy and got picked up by all the metal blogs, Lamb Goat, Metal Sucks. And it's just this ridiculously heavy 4-song EP where the songs are, like, you know, a couple minutes long.
He made it
in his bedroom, and it was just like this fun one-off thing. It's called Beast, Empathy is a Gift, but he worked with this guy on that. Mm-hmm. And apparently he's going to be producing the rest of whatever this Drugs album is, which he also confirmed in these interviews. So first off, as we do on Note to Scene, let's just talk about the song. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think it's a good song. It's a demo, right? Like, they're going to release another version of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be interested to hear that. I feel like it goes, like, a little bit all over the place. There's, like, one part in the middle or towards the end that's just, like, more electronic, but just, like, I don't, it feels like it doesn't really fit in there, or, like, it mm-hmm. didn't really, like, it just kind of felt, like, plopped in.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to hear, I guess, what the actual version sounds like, but, like, it's a good song. Like, it's got, like, a pretty good hook.
Yeah, I felt like it was a okay post-hardcore song in 2020.
Mm.
It has a lot of that same, you can tell he was trying to reach back into the electronic elements of the first Drugs album and bring a little bit of that back with some of that,
which,
you
I
know,
feel like
radio
is a
rock
good
ready
move.
Song. Like, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's obviously not trying to make Drugs bigger than they were before.
No.
He's trying, it's fan service.
Like, we live in a world where that's not happening. So fan service
right.
is what.
But he didn't say, you know, he could have been like, this is Drugs in 2020 and released a pop song. You know?
I feel like that would have not been a good move.
No, not at all. But he could have done
been
it.
Stupid.
He could have done it, and I don't put it past any scene bros
you're
these
right.
days.
Like, okay, I see what you're saying. Like,
right.
That
right.
could have been what we got, and it right. would have been like, why?
Right.
Yeah. But instead, yeah, he did the fan service.
We got a bit of a return to form for Craig, which is literally, you know, what everyone wants at this point. But he did an interview with Brian Leak. So Brian and Rabab and I kind of go back a little ways. Brian used to write at Alternative Press when we all worked at Alternative Press too. And he, you know, he has a long history writing for scene blogs, and he's kind of progressed his writing career beyond all of that into Billboard and Forbes, which is where the song premiered. And he did an interview with Craig, and the first question in the interview, I'm just going to read it word for word. The question is, there's been some negativity directed at you lately related to your prominence in music compared to maybe where you were during your time with Chiodos and Drugs. What effect has that had on you? Craig says, I try my best to detach myself from negative comments. Over time, I've learned how to channel my responses and that kind of energy into music, but I'd be lying if I didn't say it hurt my feelings. I guess it just adds a little bit to the depression that I have. So the best way for me to combat that is to create music, and I try not to let that negativity linger because I know the longer I hold on to it and dwell on it, the more it's only going to hurt me. Deep breath before we unpack this.
I want to begin by saying the word negativity was used so much, and I just, no, that's not, again, like, that's not what the point of this was. And you can't just ignore bad things. Like, in right. your life, if you just try to ignore everything that's bad that happens or things that make you feel bad and just push them down, Like, everybody has things that make them feel sad. The truth mm-hmm. hurts sometimes. It mm-hmm. just does. But that doesn't mean that no one should speak it.
Right, exactly. You can't look at one thing and not the other. And Craig Owens, regardless of where he stands in 2020 versus 2010, is still a public figure.
And still mattered enough for us to take a look back and document what his career has been. Like, that's not negative.
It's documentation. It's not a teardown. And for him to say and bring up his depression and how that ties into that, I'm not here to talk about, you know, how people should feel and what they should feel and tell them any way to do it. I just think that this answer was complete bullshit. And I know Craig, and I, you know, used to talk to him back in the day, and we weren't close, we weren't best friends, but we were somewhat of acquaintances, and I know how his mind works, and I know how he navigates things. And when I was talking to him during that time, it was already on his way out of his, you know, peak as far as scene stardom goes. And that sort of emotional manipulation of playing the victim all the time is complete bullshit to me.
I don't know Craig Owens at all. I think I maybe met him one time. I mean, I don't ever want to do anything. Like, I don't ever go into anything intentionally trying to make someone feel bad or, like, take any joy in that. So I'll just say that. But I do think that, I'm not even going to say Craig. I'm just going to say I think that in this particular little world, that is something that comes up a lot and feels, I don't want to say, yeah, I do. I guess, yeah, disingenuous, where it's just like, I don't know. Like, we've all dealt with people. Everyone deals with shit. Everyone, you know, suffers from different, like, depression, anxiety. Like, those are real things that people deal with on a daily basis. Everyone. And I'm not saying that he's not depressed. Like, again, it's something that a lot of people deal with. But I think the part of progression in dealing with that people typically forget is that when you treat other people poorly because of your own issues, it doesn't mean that you don't have to acknowledge specifically what you've done or apologize for the things that you've done.
Right.
You don't just say, like, sorry, I was going through a really shitty time, I was depressed, or, like, sorry that I flipped out on you, like, my anxiety just really came up and, like, I lost it. Like, you have to be specific with people about, like, the things that you do or say, and apologize if you're actually gonna try and be a better person.
Right.
Not just use it as an excuse of, like...
Exactly.
And again, not talking about Craig, just speaking in general.
In general, you can't use, you know, your own personal demons as a catch-all excuse for being a shitty person.
Right. That's it. That's all I'm trying to say. Again, not related to him, not related to anyone specific, but just something that I feel like is...
Exists
in this world.
Definitely. So, Brian, I reached out to Brian. I asked him to be on the show. He, you know, politely declined, and we had a talk because we had not a back and forth on Twitter, but we had a discussion about things. And I do, you know, I respect him. Him and I talked a lot when we were at AP and we were working together, and he does have, you know, a wealth of knowledge of the scene, and he goes back quite a ways with the things that he's been involved with and the bands that he's helped document over the years. So shout out to Brian.
And also, like, everything he does, I believe, you know, does it with the right intentions. And,
yeah, definitely. So. Definitely.
I don't think that when I said the thing about how this says negativity so much, like, I don't think he was trying to, like, I don't take offense.
To call us
yeah,
out.
I don't take offense to it. I just, in my humble opinion, mm-hmm. like, it wasn't meant to be something negative, which I think that's where, when you're talking about why we did this and, like, maybe the way some people view what we're doing is that they see us as, like, trying to be negative or trying to, like, tear people down or make fun of or whatever it may be. And maybe sometimes you, Tyler Sharp, border on that, taking some joy and taking the piss out of the scene. But as far as, like, editorial stuff that's going to go on the site, that's different than a tweet. We're, like,
totally.
We're trying to make... No one's, like, taking track of this or not. You know how hard it is to find information about any bands? Like, when we go to talk about them and I'm, like, trying to dig something up, it's so hard to find. Like, nearly impossible just because no one is talking about this anymore. Right. Like, trying to look back on it and figure out what went wrong.
There's no...
Or maybe nothing went wrong.
Right. There's no history book, and not that we're trying to write a history book, but I think it's important to document this stuff because there are people who still care about it, and we've proved it with this show and with our fucking Facebook page. But I definitely pump the gas a lot on a lot of things that I do.
I'll work on the Tyler Sharp takedown piece coming soon.
Let's go. Take me down. But I stand by everything that I've ever tweeted, and... I do, and I, you know, I'm not going to take back any of it, but I do understand where people are coming from and why they feel the way that they feel, and I know that they're going to feel that way. That's half the reason why I tweet what I do. So this is what it is. At the end of the day, Drugs is back in 2020, and we got a new song, and I, you know, there's no other band. I was talking with Matt on the phone the other night, and we were like, that's it. That's the last band, you know? It's Tom and Blink. That's the last thing. Right. But as far as bands coming back, there's nothing else. You got the three you never thought you'd get. Drugs, From First to Last with Sonny, and MCR. It's time to fill in the landfill. It's time to fill it back in. This is it. This is the last one. But so... To wrap up the Craig and Drugs talk, Craig is recording an album. He's working on it. He's writing it. As of right now, there is no one else involved in the creation of it besides him or writing the songs. You can definitely hear it in the new song. I'm at about a 6 out of 10 on it. But you can definitely, you know, realize and acknowledge that the Matt Good magic is not there. And it's missing that... post-hardcore magic that the first Drugs album took and made into like a rock radio ready sound. But
what does Matt Good think? I'd like to hear it.
I want to know
why aren't you involved? If are you going to get involved? I don't know. I mean we talked about this. I don't think anyone from the past Drugs will be involved, which without Matt Good, I just don't.
It's not going to be as good as it once was, and I don't think people should expect it to be, considering all the circumstances of, you know, the scene and where it's at right now. I think Craig, I won't stick my foot in my mouth there, but but at the end of the day, we got this back. He's writing an album. It will come out at some point. He does have plans to take it on tour and perform live. You know,
how long has it been since Craig Owens has been on tour?
He went on tour last year.
Okay.
With Bad Channels. Some EDM project called Getter, I think it was called, took him out, and they were with another act too. And they performed like, I think one night they performed like a Chiodo song with Craig. So he has been on tour. He does all the emo night shit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot we could unpack about Craig and his mentality and exactly how he's navigated the scene and his whole trajectory, but save for another 3-hour episode.
Maybe one day Craig will come and talk to you and tell his
I would love story. It. Craig, come on the show. I would love it. So for the second half of this show, I wanted to unpack Craig and Drugs on the first half, but the second half, I wanted to do a listener question breakdown because I've had a lot of people write in, and we've done a lot of marathons lately of MCR and All Time Low.
You also promised it and lied because you're a liar, so you get half of what was promised.
Listen, I have a lot on my plate. I'm trying my best.
I'm doing my best.
I'm doing my best to always get this show out every single week, and it is incredibly difficult. But I don't want it to go back to the way that it was, where we were dropping like 2 episodes a month. So we're going to break down some listener questions.
Let's go.
First one is from listener David. He writes in, Hot Mulligan. Any thoughts? I hate modern pop punk, but this is God-tier music. Think it'll go anywhere?
I'm very excited to talk about Hot Mulligan right now.
That's why I put it as the first one.
Let's go.
So, you know way more about this band than I do. I was not at ground level for them. I literally, today when I was listening through their albums, was the first time I listened to more than like one Hot Mulligan song in one sitting.
I just heard him listening to it and he hadn't sent me what the questions were. Also, he didn't send me the outline for this episode until we were beginning recording it, just so everyone knows. But
again, trying my best.
I heard Tyler listening to Hot Mulligan and I was like, that's weird, because he's always listening to, like, sad butt rock or country or that freaking Co Wetzel song, February 28th, whatever. I've heard about 100,000 times. Actually, he listened to the new Lil Uzi Vert song, I'm not kidding you, probably 25 times in
that
a row.
That shit is flames. Go stream that shit right now. It samples of Backstreet Boys. It's got a song called
like
They Laugh
samples.
At Me Because I'm Emo. I Killed My Girlfriend Because That's Why I'm Single.
So,
let's
yeah.
go.
I heard that at least 30 times today. But before that, Tyler was listening to Hot Mulligan and I was like, that's weird. I sent him a message and I was like, are you listening to Hot Mulligan right now? So then he sent me the questions and I was like, oh, that makes sense. Anyway, yes, I want to hear your thoughts on Hot Mulligan because, like you said, you're not a big fan.
Okay. So I
or not,
did
you're not a fan,
my
but you
first,
hadn't listened.
Right. I hadn't done the dive and I did a very brief dive today and I listened to about 10 songs back to back to back, just completely on shuffle throughout their whole category. I appreciate singers who realize that they cannot sing and just want to yell.
That is...
I appreciate that so much. I am absolutely calling out Neck Deep right now. Go back to yelling, you cannot sing, Ben. That being said, I think Hot Mulligan is a fun, young pop punk band. I can't even remember the name of the first song that I listened to. It's their top number one song on Spotify right now.
It's not Armadillo Shells?
That might be it. But it's the one with like the electronic beats behind it throughout most of the song, and then the rest of it comes in like full band later on. I thought that was a super interesting proposition for, you know, modern pop punk. And I enjoyed that as a new kind of take on what you can do with it. Overall, there's just other things I would listen to besides this band to get what they offer out of it. But I think the songs are solid. And I will say, like, those Spotify streams, they're good. Like, they have multiple songs over 2 million, quite a few over a million. I like that they're just dropping Lucy's and not just, you know, an
album. They do have an album coming
years.
Out.
Do they?
Okay. I think it's coming out next week.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, which is what some of the songs you were listening to were from that.
Got
album.
You.
They're new
got
ones.
You. Okay. So, yeah, I think this is a, you know, if you're into new wave pop punk, definitely check these guys out. I know their drummer, Brandon Blakely. I haven't talked to him in years, but I went on tour with him one time. And great guy. So I'm glad that he has gotten some momentum with this band. And I believe he's also in another band that I can't remember the name of right now, but just a smaller pop punk band.
Okay. So Hot Mulligan, I feel like fall into a very specific brand of pop punk that sways more emo. So it's like the Free Throws and Heart Attack Man, which I've been kind of obsessed with lately.
Shout out to Twitter.
But I think Hot Mulligan are kind of on that same tier with Heart Attack Man, where like they have enough personality on socials and they genuinely write really good songs that are, you know, like I love an upbeat song that's actually like extremely dark and sad and lyrical content. That's like my thing.
That's Rebob's brand.
So that's what they do. And I think that this is like you said, they're a great example of a young band in that genre. And I think the question was like, do you think it's going to go anywhere? And I mean, it already is going somewhere. You just mentioned their streams. Their new song, which is a banger, the Equip Sunglasses. They had a Billboard premiere, which is a good look for them. Like, again, we've
definitely
talked about this. We're like, people that are reading Billboard don't, you know what I mean? Like, they just aren't, it's probably not pulling them a ton of numbers, regardless of how big Billboard is, but it's a really good look for them.
Sure.
So, I think, yes, it is going somewhere. Are they going to be on the freaking Billboard Hot 100?
No.
Probably, like, no. But they write awesome songs. They have, like, a good dedicated fan base. I haven't seen them in a while. I'm not going to say who else played this show, but the order of the show was backwards. Hot Mulligan were like the first opener. I think they were one of four. They had the biggest crowd, went off the hardest, and then like everyone left. And as we got to the headliner, there was like maybe 20 people left.
That's so funny.
But they have the fans to back it up. It's not just like they're streaming and no one's actually like going to their shows. Mm-hmm. People are super into them. They have, like I said, they got the personality. I'm excited for them. I think that that scene in general, that like I said, the more emo leaning pop punk is pretty healthy right now. Like, it's, again, it's not gonna, none of these bands are gonna blow up, but like they all tour, like you could see them rotate on tour what bands are together. And you know, they can sell out like smaller size venues and then sell merch and like they're doing fine. These, they figured out a way to make a living off of music. So I think that's like the best we can ask. But I think Hot Mulligan are like outpacing all of those bands just a little
bit. Which is interesting. Yeah, definitely. And shout out to these completely random song titles.
I want
every band to bring them back. All You Wanted by Michelle Branch.
I knew you were. That song is the
I remember, because they premiered it on AP, right? And then Michelle Branch, like, actually added them, and they were like, I don't get it. That's what she said.
She's like, I don't understand.
But every band
feel
should
like
bring that
crab,
back.
F-E-A-L, like,
right.
What?
Exactly.
That's one of the newer ones, I think.
Yeah. How do you know it's not Armadillo Shells? I love it. That's great. But every band should take note of Hot Mulligan and even more so Heart Attack Man, which you mentioned about their social media presence and
I
how
love
far
Heart Attack Man
it can take
media.
You as a band. Right. I get it. All any rock musician, the only thing they want to do is play their guitar. That's it. And they don't want to do any interviews. They don't want to do any press. They don't want to do anything outside of making music, and they're boring as hell.
Okay.
All it takes is a little bit of effort on social media, and it will send your band miles and miles down the road.
Right.
So, okay, moving
listen
on.
Listen to Heart Attack Man.
Listen to Heart Attack Man. Rabob's official note to scene cosign. Moving on. Good afternoon, Tyler and guest. I just wanted to say I'm very happy to have the podcast back. I wanted to know what you think the future might hold for Real Friends after their third album did not further their career. Daniel.
Savage, Daniel.
So, Daniel, this is actually a pretty old question. It was asked and sent in before. His name's Dan, right?
Dan. Lampton, yes.
I totally spaced for a second. Too many Daniels and Dans going on.
Damn,
but
Daniel.
After Damn Daniel left Real Friends. So, Real Friends is so interesting as a band because they come from the suburbs of Chicago. They would play Northwest Indiana all the time, which is where I'm from. And I saw them in Knuckle Puck way before they got like actual momentum outside of this little local bubble. And to see the hype that they once had and for it to completely just revert after they basically dropped their first full-length album was wild to watch because there was a time where Real Friends was the next pop-punk band.
I think that we have to like look at it from like a business perspective for a moment, and here's how it works, kids that are all in bands that want to be signed.
Break it down.
Right, like they made a local scene, like Real Friends, Knuckle Puck, you know, that Chicago scene, and they're playing like house shows and it's super fucking cool and like they're getting all this hype, they're selling merch, and they're like, as you get bigger and bigger and you make your local scene something, and then a record label can look at that and be like, well, if that's what they can do on their own with nothing, then we can make some money from this. And that's how it happens. Like, everyone thinks like, oh, I wrote really good songs. No one fucking cares about your songs. A record label wants to make money. That's literally why they exist. Like,
they don't care what you buy as long as you buy it from them.
Right. Like, the naivety that goes in it, and they're like, people are just like, I mean, I've been slogging it out and I'm writing amazing songs. Like, good for you.
No one gives a fuck about
your
art.
Did anyone buy it? Are people streaming it? Like, why would a record label want it? Like, that's just not how it works.
Exactly.
They want to see that you're able to sell shows, like sell out shows and sell merch and do all of this stuff on your own before they're willing to take on what is a risk and try and sell you to a wider audience. It's business, kids. So Real Friends, I think, like, they did that. Shout out to Charlotte. She's throwing in her two cents on Real Friends. That's my cat. She's just present.
Charlotte with her first note to scene feature.
There she is. So that's what Real Friends did. They built up that momentum. They were on Fearless the whole time, right?
Or no. Because they were on. When they built all their hype, that was their big thing, was that they refused to sign to a label.
Right.
They had offers from every label in the scene. And they chose Fearless for their first full length. I still even think that Late Nights in My Car song, I can't remember what EP that's off of, I think they put that out independently too.
Okay. So, yeah, they, I'm sure, recognize that that's, you know, what's going to happen with the labels. They're going to maybe take you to the next level, but if they do, it's not, like, it's so that they can make you some more money and also make themselves money. That's, again,
that's the point.
The point of this. Fearless signs them, and then after that, like, I don't know, like, the whole magic of Real Friends is that it feels like your thing. And, like, you play... I think the same thing is kind of, like, where Knocked Loose is, where it's, like, you're, like, why don't they just sign to a bigger... Like, why aren't they on Roadrunner now?
Mm-hmm.
But I think in their heads, like, I don't know. Like, that might not be good for them. Maybe it would. I don't know. Yeah. But part of their magic is that it feels like a small thing that you're a part of.
Right.
And when Real Friends went and, like, tried to branch out of that, like... I mean, you were listening to the On the Outside song. I think that's a good song.
I did. There were songs off of the last Real Friends album that I were like, okay, this is coherent pop punk.
This is coherent pop punk. I mean, they did write good songs, but I don't...
You're right. There was a community sentiment shift
when they signed. We lost a little bit of that. And they tried... They continued to do things where they would do, like, the $5 shows.
Right.
And they still played smaller venues and, like... If that's where their career lives and thrives, like, I think it's fine to
embrace
that.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, when they dropped their first full length in 2014, maybe this place is the same and we're just changing it. And I think, musically, that was the first misstep for them, because a lot of people didn't gravitate towards those songs the way they did those first EPs. And I do think, to an extent, that them signing to a label
that
and being part... Right,
yeah.
Exactly. They were like... Whether or not you admit it or address it in your own, you know, personal headspace, putting a record label on a band does have some effect on your sentiment towards
them.
Right,
and it doesn't feel like it's yours anymore.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's bigger than...
It's part of the machine now.
Right, it's bigger than the space that you always envisioned that they would exist in. And, you know, that being said, I think the record musically was also a very big letdown. I think if they would have came out and wrote the next, you know... wrote a record as good as Take This to Your Grave, which is what people thought they were going to do and the pedestal that they had put them on, then I think a lot would be different for them. But, you know, they came out, I think they did around 7,000 first week, and ever since then it's just been completely downhill, and I think the last one did under 2,000 first week. So they are existing in a very, very small space. Dan is no longer in the band. I have no idea what the future holds for... I mean, so many questions.
Like,
what are they going
to
do?
Genuinely, this is not... I'm not trying to throw shade at them. I'm genuinely curious. Why would you delete everything on your socials? Like, what is the point of that?
There was some behind-the-scenes shit that went on, I'm sure, between members and a lot of inner turmoil that we don't know about.
Sure.
I think there was some rash decisions made on the side of a member or multiple members where some wanted it to end, some didn't. One, you know, whatever happened, we don't know. But I think there were some unfortunate casualties along the way as far as their online presence goes.
I do think at some point we'll find out.
Yeah.
Especially if, okay, so here's in my head what could happen is, like, do they get a new singer and reform and come back as Real Friends with someone else? That's an option. One of them, like, just sing now instead.
Right.
Or just nothing. Like, don't come back at all.
Right.
Like, those are what happen. So if they decide to come back and try to do a big push and maybe have, like, someone else that's, like, a pretty prominent person in pop punk.
Right. If they could grab a vocalist from another band.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that creates inherently some more hype behind it. They're never going to be as big as they once were.
Which is
or build
why
that
did
momentum
you delete
back up.
Everything. In 10 years, if anyone is talking about Real Friends, they're going to be talking about that era, and it's just
they have no
gone.
Timeline now. Yeah, you gotta
go. Why did you do that, guys? Someone tell me.
You gotta go back through the Facebook event pages. I dug up a flyer not too long ago where they opened for Sworn In and there was another local Chicago, like, heavy deathcore-y, metalcore-y band, and I cannot remember what their name was, but they were, like, a super, super cool band to like from the Chicago area.
God, I hate that phrase.
The super, super cool band to like in, like, 2013 from the Chicago area, and I cannot remember what it was, but they used to play these house shows, and you're right, it has so much to do with that community and that what they built before they became quote-unquote part of the machine. And that's super interesting to see how much that still turns kids off, because Mackenzie and I talked about on last episode about All Time Low and how sellouts, the term doesn't really exist anymore, but there is still that pack mentality of like when you're at ground level for a band in specific spaces such as pop punk, when it becomes more part of your typical cycles and label type stuff, the sentiment does change behind it. So that's interesting too. But
you're also getting more removed from the band members themselves, right?
Because yeah, they become a publicist in a separate space. Between
it, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, a lot happens. Like, things do change.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's just, a pack mentality. A lot of it is that, but like, genuinely, there is some change in a band from the time that they are, like, playing your local house show to when they're, like, becoming an arena band. Like, that's not an often thing we see here. You're not Fall Out Boy Panic anymore.
Definitely.
But...
definitely.
Yeah.
No, super interesting, though. That will definitely be an episode in the future. So, moving on, next question. Hey, Tyler, so glad Note to Scene is back up and running. I just wanted to get your opinion on new music from Silverstein. I've been having a lot of fun with these three songs. Anyways, thanks for continuing the podcast. There was definitely a void when you guys took a break, and it's wonderful to have you back, Drew. First off, thank you so much. That means the world to me, and I'm so glad that... Drew, you're taking the time to listen. So these new Silverstein songs, they dropped three of them. They all have features, which is interesting.
Yes.
They dropped Burn It Down featuring Caleb Shomo, Infinite featuring Aaron Gillespie, and Bad Habits featuring Intervals. So first off,
Bad Habits is by far the best song out of the three.
Not even on the same level as the other
there's
two.
There's not a competition. That song is like probably the best Silverstein song that has been released in,
you know, the last 5 years.
I'd say it's the last, at least the last two albums.
Yeah, so. For sure. It is a straight up pullback from their early years while, you know, sounding like they're recording music in 2020, right. Which is, at this point...
They pulled that off so well.
It's seamless. Like, it feels like there's still so much energy left in this band. You have what you loved from the old sound, but it sounds like they're grown-ass dudes playing this music.
Yeah, it's
now.
Like, they figured out what so many bands... It's like literally what you and Mackenzie were talking about last week. With so many bands, like, struggle to find where they want to do something different or sound different, but at the same time, like, exist and make music, and they have a group of fans that they need to serve that, you know, have expectations, and I like they're nailing it right now. I haven't heard the full album yet, and we actually are going to do an interview with them and talk about this pretty much, is basically like, you know, about the features, why add the features, and then also like how do you write music that's still Silverstein while not just doing the same exact thing that you've done
years. And I think the other two songs are their attempt to branch out from not just being a post-hardcore band in 2020. I think they missed the mark a lot. Very disappointed that Aaron gets like three lines in his song. I think if you wanted to do the throwback post-hardcore song, you'd do it with Aaron, you know, just throwing that out there. But Burn It Down feels like, and Silverstein and Beartooth have a very like long history together where they performed as Silvertooth and whatever all that was. So that
an iconic Warped Tour moment, Tyler.
Okay, whatever. I was checked out at that point.
That's when Tyler took a break from the scene. You have to.
Got really into emo hip hop when that was happening.
I also did, but I still worked at AP.
So that song is kind of like a straightforward, more rocky side of Silverstein. Infinite with Aaron has a very much more side of electronic influence, and Bad Habits is the post-hardcore banger. So at the end of the day, Silverstein has kind of always been that reliable band that makes music that their fans kind of love regardless, and they have been able to deliver time and time again, especially after kind of you know, they went through that weird phase towards, like, 2010 to 2013. They released, like, a punk album called, like, Short Songs, and that, like, really threw everyone for a loop, because post-hardcore fans just don't want any of that shit. But they, in 2013, they released an album called This Is How the Wind Shifts, and that was definitely, it was a bit of a concept album, but there was a lot of old-school Silverstein magic that they brought back into the fray. And then they came to Rise in 2015, which was a crazy move, and I remember talking to friends about it back then, how crazy it was to see Silverstein on Rise Records. But they released an album called I Am Alive and Everything I Touch, and I can't remember exactly what the lead single was. I think it was A Midwestern State of Emergency, but whatever that first single was, it had people like, holy shit, like Silverstein is back, and those dudes are like post-hardcore goats. And then they released Dead Reflection in 2017, and that had more of like a pop, not pop, but like the rock radio side of things. And I fucking called it on this show when the Afterglow came out. I was like, that is the song.
That is such a good song.
That is the song. And it's their top song besides Infinite right now on Spotify. It has 14 million streams. Bangers are bangers. They talk for themselves.
You could hear that song and like not even realize that it's not, like, it's new.
Right.
You know, like,
totally.
It could fit anywhere. And there was another song on that album, I think it's called Ghost, that I was also pretty obsessed with. Like, there were some genuinely great songs on that album.
I think that was the one that reminded me of, like, earlier Story of the Year.
And they've, like you said, they just, they're consistent. They experiment, they, like, throw in a couple of little elements of other things that they wanna, you know, see how it goes, which is cool, but they always still sound like Silverstein.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why some bands can continue to have a career and tour and release music and sell merch, and some go out into the great unknown and really shut it down for themselves.
And I do tend to leave them out of the conversation of bands that survived when the scene fell apart behind them, and I will definitely not from here on out after having this conversation and kind of breaking it down, because I always bring up The Main and Every Time I Die and August Burns Red, but Silverstein definitely fits into that category too.
They really held it down for post-hardcore. Also, they're just like genuinely nice people. Like,
I've met them
a few times, and like, you know, when you interact with a lot of bands, you would not believe how many of them just act like ridiculous. And you're like, I would love you to recognize that you're in a pop punk band, you play to 500 people max a night. I need you to chill with your ego. But then there's some bands, and Silverstein are one of them, where like every time I've met them, they've just been so polite, and like you interview them and they're like thanking you so much for it. I'm like, dude, like, they're just doing my job. It's fine.
But wholesome just, as hell.
Yeah, they like go out of their way to make sure you know that they appreciate what you're doing for them.
Good.
So
good.
Thank you, Silverstein, for being nice and releasing good music and carrying the torch for post-hardcore.
Totally. Shout out to Silverstein. I don't have another question, but I wanted to read this one from a listener. Her name's Sarah. She's from Australia, and this was probably my favorite email I've ever gotten for the show. No questions, but I just want to read through it. She says, "Hey Tyler, thank you so much for bringing Note to Scene back. As if you would leave me hanging on how our favorite bands are struggling these days. No questions this email, I just wanted to spitball some ideas. A mate of mine runs Australia's equivalent of Emo Night. It's called AMPM. Check that shit out. He would have some cool insight, the rise and fall of emo here and how he rebuilt a healthy scene again. A lot of places have tried and failed. I know they aren't big in the US, but Trophy Eyes, Tonight Alive, The Amity Affliction, Devil Wears Prada, Parkway Drive, etc. have all played parts in it."
Parkway Drive are pretty big in the US.
They are the one that really has had crossover. And, you know, back in the mid-2000s, they were considered like, that was a very significant metalcore name back in the day, and they've evolved into like, they make arena metalcore now, which is a dope sound.
Also,
and
Trophy Eyes, if you don't talk about that song that I've had to hear you play 8,000 times,
it's so good. I'm not gonna unpack it too much right now because I want to get through this, but
that sucks.
Go cop that new Trophy Eyes song. Holy shit, here we are in 2020 and they dropped a fucking banger. Holy shit. Shout out to saxophone and pop punk. Every band should be doing that. She continues, please make a Spotify playlist for Note to Scene. I find myself listening to the band's songs discussed each episode, and then back to the pod, and then back to the songs. I think some of us elderly 30-year-olds need a refresher. Also, a playlist means we can listen to some recommendations you bring up. I definitely want to do this. I made one way, way back in the day when we started it, and I completely forgot about it until you wrote this question in. So I will definitely start making that again and base it around the episodes and other stuff that Rabab and I are listening to. She continues, where is my Avril Lavigne podcast? What's your favorite conspiracy about her? I'm pretty sure she was a member of Bury Your Dead. All the round of applause for that one. I sent this to Finn this morning before we recorded it, and he had a good laugh out of it. That I haven't kept the Bury Your Dead joke up as much as I would want to, but...
You don't yes. have to. Sarah is here to handle
Sarah
it.
Sarah is here.
Thank you, Sarah.
To continue the Bury Your Dead joke. Definitely Avril Lavigne was a member of Bury Your Dead. I don't know what my
Let's
favorite...
Let's add that to the Wikipedia.
We should go do it
Guys,
right
check
now.
Check the Wikipedia.
So, I don't have a favorite conspiracy about her, but one that I have... This isn't a conspiracy, but one thing that I keep coming back to Avril in 2019 and 2020 is how fucking much Travis from We The Kings comments on her photos on Instagram. Travis, Everyone. Stop. It's every time.
He did.
I know you
I
wrote
know,
with her.
I, like, I don't know if you know, but he wrote
I
a
know,
song with her.
I know. Listen, I listened to the album. I was there at midnight when it came out. I am here for Avril. Forever Stan, first celebrity crush. I am there to support her in any way she needs. But Travis, stop.
Leave Avril alone.
Leave her alone, please. She does not reply to you or interact with any of your comments. Anyways,
Back
she continues. Thanks for chatting about the scene, Tyler. If you ever need weird stories about doing shrooms with Christopher Drew, hit me
up.
We
need them.
Thanks for everything. Much love, Sarah. Sarah, thank you so much. This email
brought a lot of joy.
Brought so much joy to me the day that you wrote it in, and it looks like I'm going to have to reply and ask you about shrooms with Christopher Drew.
We need to know that. We also need to find out about her friend who runs AMPM, because I think that's an interesting thing that I've talked with you about before. But apparently the scene in Australia is actually thriving.
Actually thriving, and it's completely different.
They're
than
living
it is
an alternate
here.
Universe to us.
Literally.
We need to get some guests from Australia and see how it feels.
Literally. You know, even back in the day when A Day to Remember would co-headline with Amity on tours in Australia, I was like, damn, I wonder what it's like over there. Like, it feels like a completely different world.
Right.
And yeah, I would love to unpack all of that, because there are
the
other
scene is
spaces.
Going, the note to scene goes down under. We need to plan
note
a trip.
To scene goes
We're gonna
down
go to
under.
Australia. There will be pictures of me and Tyler
oh,
hugging
God.
Koalas.
Note to scene down under. Come on, I'm all about it. But thank you all for everyone who has ever written into the show. I still have more questions, so I'm still going to bring them up. We might do half and half episodes more often so we could talk more about other bands the way we have on this episode. But still fleshing it out ideas. If you have any questions whatsoever about anything, please write them in at notetoscene@gmail.com. And if you like the show, please go give it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Our entire back catalog is on Spotify right now. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening to the show, reading the website, contributing in any way as a fan to any of this. Rabab and I really, really appreciate it. But until next week, I will talk to you then.